The following presentation was recorded at the Buddhist Society of Victoria, Malvern East, Australia. Please visit our website at bsv.net.au.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sangkang namassami ito parang sakajang dhammo sotapote.
Okay, nice to see you all. Nice to see you on a nice sunny day. It's good to see that you've come here for today to listen to the Dhamma, practice the Dhamma. It's quite encouraging. Emphasize Srijut. Happy Father's Day to all the dads that are out there, all the direct fathers, all the indirect fathers, all the fathers in that help out the world in so many different ways. It's a good day to recollect on their goodness. Srijut said we had a meditation retreat yesterday, and yesterday we did a retreat, and we actually had a whole day doing what we call Maranano Sati, which is death reflection. And I did this retreat and I thought everybody's just going to leave. They're going to run away. And surprisingly, a lot of people stayed, and they stayed all day, and they were quite happy to reflect on these things. So I thought I'd actually, while I'm thinking about it, I may as well continue on the theme of it. And so obviously death is something that's quite daunting for so many people. It's daunting for nearly all of us. And we spend a lot of our time trying not to actually even think about it at all, because it's so, you know, it's so opaque. It's something that seems so distant, so potentially so scary. But if we think this is a bit of a paradox, because it's the only thing that's really certain in life. So why do we spend so much time resisting it? And so this is what I wanted to talk about today, is like, well, why do we resist it so much, and what do we do about resisting it? And I think the biggest thing that we need to try to do around the topic of death is just to develop a different kind of attitude. And this attitude is one where it's okay. Death is okay. It's okay to die. It's okay to be a living organism that eventually passes away. It's also okay to have resistance towards it. It's okay to grieve for people. Developing this attitude where it's a natural, normal thing, and it's okay. And so how do we actually do that? Well, we have to contemplate on it. We have to reflect on it quite a lot. And this is something that the Buddha really emphasized. He emphasized us developing Maranano Sati, or this is the mindfulness of death. And he says in many places, and especially in the Majjhima Nikaya, he says, mindfulness of death brings great fruit and brings great benefit. And those who practice it, they have the deathless as their goal. And there's another really nice place in the suttas where the Buddha asks all the monks, they're all coming together, and the Buddha asks them all, he's like, how often do you recollect death? And one monk says, you know, I think if I live a night and a day, maybe tomorrow I might die. And the Buddha's like, that's okay. Another one says, I just do it that I might die at the end of the day. And the Buddha's like, that's okay. Another one says, you know, the time it takes me to eat my full meal. And the Buddha says, well, that's not quite there yet. Another one says, 4 mouthfuls, still not there yet. And certainly when they get down to the monk saying, I take 1 mouthful of food and I recollect that I might die, or I take an in-breath and an out-breath that I might die in this, that this is the only time that the Buddha says you're being resolute, you're being heedful at that time. And so we might think of that and it's like, well, wow, that's a lot. That's a lot to actually do. How am I going to recollect death at every breath? And what's that going to do to me in some kind of way? How do I live my whole life with every in and out breath thinking about death. How do I make plans in life? How do I function in society thinking about death all the time? Is this going to make me morbid? Is this in some kind of way? So again, this is what I wanted to talk about and today, in a way, to reassure people that, again, it's okay. If we do this, and it doesn't make us morbid, it doesn't mean that we can't do anything in life. It actually brings up quite a vitality for life. It allows us to really appreciate different things in life and really to just become very accepting with it, that it's okay. So the first big question that we have with this is, if death is guaranteed, why do we have such a resistance to it? It's a bit of a paradox, but if you look in the literature and you look at the reasons why a lot of people are afraid of death, it's totally understandable. People are usually worried that for things like, they don't want their family to grieve for them. They don't want to be a burden to their family. They might be worried about projects or something that you have on that these things don't get finished. And even down to, people can get quite concerned about what happens to their body after death. And also people get quite concerned, they don't really know what happens after death, so they get quite worried about it. Again, all this is totally okay. This is totally understandable. And when we look in the suttas, what the Buddha said about it, why people are fearful, there's something called the Abhaya Sutta in the in the Anguttara Nikaya, where the Buddha says that there's two kinds of people in the world, those that are fearful of death and those that aren't fearful of death. And those that are fearful of death, the Buddha says that the first reason they're fearful is because they don't want to leave sensual pleasures. The second reason is that they have an attachment to the body. The third reason is that they have spent their life causing harm and not spent their life doing something good. So they have a fear of death. And the last one is they have doubts about the doctrine. And obviously there's the opposite. The person that doesn't fear death is somebody that isn't attached to sensual pleasures, isn't attached to the body, has spent their life doing good things and not harming people, and has a confidence in the doctrine. And so we have these different things where, you know, there's the general view of why people might be scared of death, and the Buddha also recollects why we might be scared of death as well. And I think we can build on these understandings. And I think for me, one of the big things, I think why a lot of people are fearful of death is because this thing that I really take to be the center of my existence, this is a thing that feels constant for me. I've lived with it my whole life, and I don't know what it's going to be like if that thing is not there. And so usually we can look out into the world and there's a lot of change out in the world, but we can see change happening all the time. Days turns to nights, leaves change, all these kinds of things. People come, people go. But this thing that I think is me, this is the thing that I really think is permanent in some way. And I don't know what's going to happen if that thing goes. So it's totally understandable that we're fearful of death in some way, or we have some kind, not fearful, but maybe even just have some kind of resistance towards it. And so what do we do if we have this fear? What do we do if we have this anxiety around death in some kind of way? Again, it's okay just to tell yourself. The big thing is just to tell yourself it's okay. But another good thing to do is really get clear on what it is about death that worries you. What is it that you're worried about or fearful of? Really define it well and identify it and articulate it. And it's only when you know what it is about death that you fear that then you can actually start to work with it. Then you can start to work with this thing and start to try to find ways to overcome it. And so I think if we do this, what ends up happening is we become what we call like death positive. Now, death positive doesn't mean that, you know, I like death. I'm happy when people die. I'm not fetishizing death in any kind of way like that. What being death positive means is that we just have a good relationship with the fear or the uncertainty of death. We have a healthy kind of relationship with it, and this is something that we can continue to that we can generate, and it allows us to live life in a bit more of a joyous way. So again, if we think back to what the Buddha said, we should be recollecting this over and over again, and we can see that overcoming the fear of death, you know, this is something that would be useful. And so what are some of the benefits of reflecting on one's death very often? Well, there's the big thing of, you know, if you are fearful, you are anxious about it, then reflecting on it, what this does, it helps you overcome this fear, helps you overcome this anxiousness, not only for your own death, but for other people's death as well. It helps you to become strong in the face of this happening, and you can be a strength and a source of resilience for others that are maybe going through it. Obviously, it helps us with understanding things like impermanence, and it really allows us to have a gratitude and appreciation for our life. And for me, this is the core of this. This is the most important thing about it, is that what we believe or what we think about death, this determines how we live our life. This is really where the rubber meets the road with this thing. If we're getting caught up in the slipstream and the current of our life, we just become what the Buddha called heedless. We're just going along with the flow. We're not really focusing on our lives. But if we can recollect and we can reflect on death, then we become heedful. We start to look at the things in the world and go, well, this thing really matters to me. This is the thing that's important. How am I actually spending my time? What kind of relationships am I having with people? The more we reflect on death, the more we actually start to recognize what's truly important in life. How am I spending my time doing these things? So, you know, we don't really reflect on death to go, well, this thing is coming and it's off in the future and I'm going to have to deal with this thing at some point. It's not about that. Reflection on death is about how you live your life now. And so, you know, again, we might sort of think of like, well, you know, okay, how am I going to continually reflect on this thing? If I continue to reflect on this thing... You know, won't this, you know, if I continue to think about death, you know, if you think of somebody that maybe thinks about death a lot and the picture that comes up in your mind, maybe this person's sort of morbid or depressed or something like that. And so how do we reflect on death and not become morbid? Well, again, I think we need to change our attitude to the way that we think about death and thinking that it is just this, that it's okay, it's normal, it's natural, it's normal to have these kinds of reactions to it. And reflecting on death, I don't think this is, for me, this doesn't bring up a kind of morbidity. What it brings up is like, it's a curiosity about something in life. This is one of the most important things in life. And it's a curiosity about that thing, about one of the things that is the greatest unknowns in life. So the more you think about death, the more like you're just essentially getting curious about this thing. And so a lot of people, they you know, have a lot of resistance towards death, and there's a kind of death denial. And so personally, I think this is more unhealthy. It's much more unhealthy to have a denial of death than to go through a little bit of discomfort of thinking about death. Yeah, obviously thinking about death, it's not very comfortable. It's not, you know, it's not the nice, you know, sometimes it's not the nicest thing to do. So we have to approach this not with a kind of, you know, morbid, existential dread, but with a kind of understanding and compassion for life. And the more, you know, more we can do this, again, this starts to change our attitude to this thing. We're not, you know, resisting it. We're actually starting to accept it a little bit more. And so the more we continue to do this, the more we actually do start to see that it's just very natural, very normal. And so we might start to ask ourselves, I was like, well, okay, well, if that's the case, well, if I keep thinking about death, how do I go about living my life now then? You know, if there's going to be an end to this thing, why should I bother doing anything? You know, why should I have a family? Why should I, you know, buy a house? Why should I start a project? Why should I go and buy the groceries or anything like that? And so, again, I think this is probably like a little bit, this is not a healthy way to think about these things. You know, you can sort of think, well, I'm sure all of you have watched a movie before. Everybody's watched a movie. Yeah. So now we know a movie's going to end, don't we? You still watch the movie. You still enjoy the movie while it's on. So just because something ends, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't do something while this thing's happening. You know, we can, I think, you know, reflecting on death, this actually is the thing that, it's not that it stops you making plans, it actually makes you make better plans. It's in a way, it's forcing you to make effective plans. Because, so for me, it's like death reflection is, it's the best like time management tool that you have, because you realize you only have a limited amount of time. So this now actually makes you think, well, what are my priorities in life? What are the things that are really important to me? What are the things that are meaningful in my life? How am I spending my time? This really allows us, this doesn't stop us making plans, and this doesn't stop us doing things. It just allows us to spend our time on the things that are most important to us. And also contemplating death as well, it's what we start to realize is that a lot of our life is just mundane. There's a lot of mundanity in life, and you know, there's you know, so many mundane kind of things. But most of, you know, we can think, well, what's the big, important, meaningful things in my life, and should I always be spending my time doing that, and this is what I should be doing, but I got to go and get groceries. Most of life is just mundane. And so if we think of the mundane, and if we reflect on death, it actually allows us to appreciate the mundane. If you think, you know, you've, I don't know, again, I'm not a parent, I don't really know, but I can imagine taking a child to a grocery store would seem like a very stressful thing to me. They're running around, they're grabbing things off the shelf and all these kinds of things. And you're probably like, oh, I don't want to do this. This is a very mundane kind of boring thing to do. But you can imagine that if you were right on your deathbed, what would you trade to be back there with your kids in the shopping center? In the grocery store, just with your kids, what would you trade just for that? So reflecting on death, it doesn't make us stop us making plans and doing things. It makes us appreciate the things that we have and appreciate the bigger things in life as well. And so once we start to recognize that life and death, it's part of the same coin, then we can start to go, well, how do I, you know, on the life side of things, how do I live my life? How do I want to spend my time? And so, as I said, I think it helps us make these more useful plans in life and allows us to really focus on what we're spending our time on. So now we can sort of get to the point of like, well, how do we actually do this? How do we use this kind of reflection in the best and most healthy kind of way? Now, there's two ways to obviously do that. There's a very practical way, but then there's a meditative way. And the practical ways of doing these things is that, you know, we have to, again, one of the biggest things is identifying what it is about death that maybe worries us, or what is it that we have a resistance towards. Again, getting very, very clear on it. Once we get clear on it, we externalize it. We talk about it. It's like, I fear death because I think there'll be like an annihilation or something, or I'm fearful of the next rebirth. I don't know what it is. So we externalize it and we talk about it and we normalize it in some kind of way. And again, we're getting in touch with this thing that it's okay to have these fears. And then what we do when we externalize it and we talk about it, find somebody else to talk about it to. Find somebody to talk about it and have a conversation about it. One of the most powerful things that you can do in your life is ask somebody, it's like, well, what do you think of death? Are you worried about it in some kind of way? What do you want done with your at your death? You know, this is really important with members of your family as well. It's a really powerful conversation to have. And this starts to get us into this area of like, well, one of the best things that you can do that helps you overcome some of this apprehension as well is thinking about, well, what do I want done with my body after death? What do I want to happen? Do I want to be buried in a cemetery? Do I want to be cremated? Do I want to have a natural burial? Do I want my family to dress me in some kind of way? The more we think about these kinds of things, again, it starts to become a little bit more normal. We start to become a little bit more okay with this whole thing. We can also, and this gets us into areas where we can start thinking in a practical way, thinking about ways of like, well, what do we want to happen with our family? What kind of advanced directive do we want to have? What, you know, if you're in the hospital, what do you want the doctors to do? You can have things like a living will. You can tell the people in your family what you want done. And also a big thing is like, you know, we've got, all of us have got stuff, you know, like, we've all had like somebody that's died and it's like, I've got to deal with all this stuff now. And we've all got stuff. So what do you want to do with your stuff? Like, you're just like leaving your stuff for somebody else? Yeah, what do you, like, tell people what you want done with your stuff. So, you know, we can have these kinds of files and folders and that lets people know what we want done. These are the very practical things. And these are the things that start to get us ready for it. And then we can start to move into more of the meditative kind of things where we're actually contemplating, where we're spending some time meditating on it. You know, yesterday we had a whole day of death contemplation. And, you know, most of the people, it's like, oh, you know, I know I'm going to die and I'm okay with it. And, you know, I'm fine. I have an understanding of it. But then as we're going throughout the day and we're doing the reflections, some people come up to me and said, I actually didn't realize I still have that there. I didn't realize I still have that kind of attachment there, or I have that kind of worry there. It was only through contemplating it and digging a little deeper in it that I realized that this thing was there. So you can use these kind of contemplations in this way. But the big thing about it is, you know, you go slow. You know, it's not something you have to dive totally into. Obviously, if you look into the suttas, there's a lot of the death reflections that are in there. Some of them can seem a little bit extreme. But you know, you can just go easy with these things. We can think about all beings that have ever lived, and then we can think about people that are, you know, all the people that have ever lived, and we can just generally start to reflect more and more and getting it in closer, and then we can actually closer to ourselves, and we can see maybe where the resistance is. And so it's something that we can contemplate on, we can visualize, we can ask ourselves questions, you can reflect, and we can sit and think about it, read about it. Again, this is all just to make it normal for us, to make it so that it just becomes a normal part of life for us, so that it's something that's okay for us. You know, because the thing is, it's like, if we don't do this, like, well, it's still going to happen. You can ignore it, but it's like, it is still going to happen. So what kind of person do you want to be with this? What kind of preparation do you want from this? We can sort of think, well, it's going to come at some point. Do I want to be ready for this thing? And if it is going to come at some point, how do I, you know, again, it's not about worrying about the last point. It's about how are you going to live your life now? And so I'll just finish this off with this. There's this nice sutta where the Buddha talks about four kinds of horses. There's four kinds of different horses in the world. And the first kind of horse is he calls it, you know, a great thoroughbred. And so the first kind of horse is a horse that, you know, when the trainer comes up to it and the trainer has his whip or whatever, the horse just sees the shadow of the whip. And says and goes, well, what does the trainer want me to do? I have to do something now, so I have to do it. That's one kind of horse. Another kind of horse is one where, you know, the trainer maybe has to hit its hide, hit its backside to actually make it. And then the horse goes, well, what does the trainer want me to do now? The third kind of horse is where the one the trainer has to hit it a bit harder. You know, it's sort of, you can imagine like how people treated animals in, you know, 2,600 years ago. So where I had to hit it a lot harder and break the skin. This is the third kind of horse, where it's only then that horse goes, what does the trainer want me to do? And then there's the last kind of horse, the fourth kind of horse, where, you know, the trainer has to hit the horse to its bone. And it's only then that the horse goes, okay, this trainer wants me to do something. I should do something now. And the Buddha likened these four kinds of horses to four kinds of people in the world. And the first kind of person is somebody that, as soon as they know or hear of somebody that's died in some far off place, they become, you know, this arouses them in some way, and they become resolute. They become resolute to be heedful in life. They become resolute to develop wisdom. They become resolute to live their life in an important and meaningful way. This is like the first kind of horse, where he just sees the shadow of the whip and he knows what to do. The second kind of person is maybe somebody that sees somebody that's died, or hears or sees somebody that's ill, and then they, you know, it's only then when they become resolute, when they see someone. And this is like the third kind of horse, that somebody that the trainer just has to whip them. The third kind is, you know, when somebody in your family undertakes this, and it's only then that this person becomes resolute, start to worry about the important things in life. And, you know, obviously this doesn't happen very often, but so this is not the greatest one to be. And so the last kind of person is only when they start to become sick and they start to die themselves that they realize, I should have concentrated on the important things. I should have been heedful. And again, by that time, it's too late. And so that's like the last kind of horse that's been whipped to the bone, basically. So I think if we, the more we think about these things, again, this allows us to lead a much better life. You know, we know that something's coming, and we don't leave it until it's too late. We don't leave it until it's too late to tell people that we care about them. We don't leave it until it's too late to tell people that we're proud of them, that we love them, that we can ask for forgiveness from people. We don't leave it too late to know what's important in life and what we should be spending our time doing. We don't leave it until it's too late to appreciate just the small beauties of the very mundane things in life. And so this is why I think, you know, reflecting on this thing it's okay. It's good to do. It's not something that's morbid. It's not something that makes you stop doing things in life. It's okay. It allows you to live a more full and meaningful and rich and happy and enlivened life. So with that, I'll stop the monologue here. Very good.
Thank you, Ajahn. We'll just start. We've got three audiences today. We've got a physical audience, we've got a Discord audience, and we've got the YouTube audience. So we'll alternate between them. So first we'll start with the floor. So is anyone from the floor? Dr. Joe.
Thank you, Pantes. Very good talk and good eye-opener for everyone. A lot can be said on this topic. Firstly, we are all living beings. We are all in evolution. And part of the process of nature is that in the DNA is set for survival of you, of the unit and the species.
Yep.
It applies to all beings, including the plants.
Yep.
So that's the process. It's the DNA.
Mm.
So human beings with the ability to think and mind activity, you, of course, take it to a different plane.
Mm.
you do a lot of things to survive.
Mm.
That is why, as you said, when you are heedless, you go on that automatic process, you resist death.
Mm.
If you look at the body, every cell, we are concerned with a lot of cells, and it is constantly turning over.
Yep.
It evolves, it changes, and it dies, and allows another cell to come.
Mm.
And actually, cancer happens when this process of death is resisted.
Right,
loses his ability to die.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
The cell
loses
ability to die, you get a cancer.
Yeah.
So that is very important. Mm. I mean, for the industry, death is an essential thing in all living beings for survival of that.
Yeah.
Okay? That's something we had to learn.
Mm.
Think about the human beings, extend to another level. Buddha said, I have said it before, Buddha has said that it is extremely rare to be born as a human being. It's an extremely rare thing. You have to have a lot of merit for that.
Mm.
And he also said that you have to be lucky to be born as a human being.
Yeah.
That is because only in the human plane you can do something about this cycle of birth and death.
Yep.
But other beings can't do, animals can't do, even they said devas can't do that.
Mm.
Or they not that they can't, they don't do that.
Yep.
So the human beings, this is opportunity by reflecting death and not knowing that death can happen anytime, not when you are 90, it can happen tomorrow, that every moment has to be used to only thing what we can do is to get rid of our defilements. That is only thing a human being can do.
Yeah.
Get rid of all the conditions that you have kept in this cycle of birth and death and suffering, and we can hit painfully work on the defilements and get rid of anything every moment. Is the that is what is called living. And I think that can become urgent and become necessary when you reflect on death. Otherwise you won't.
It's a good reflection. And it also says something. You brought up the evolutionary drive of the species in this kind of way, and you also brought up about that we have to overcome the defilements, and you could sort of see this way where maybe the defilements are the thing that are sort of pushing you to be born and die, to be born. So in some kind of way, you're a little to overcome the defilements. We have to go against this urge, this drive that's there, this kind of perpetual drive. So, that's why it's hard to do. That's why it's hard, because everything about us is hardwired to survive. We're hardwired to survive, but there's also this process, as you said, there's this process of cell regeneration and death going on. So everything about us is like pushing us in this way of like survive, 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 survive. So anything that threatens that, we're resistant to it. But you're right as well. There's this, the Buddha, the Buddha said it's like it's so rare that you're born as a human being. And it's so fortunate because you can practice the Dharma as well. And you can also, building on that, you can think of like how rare, how probabilistically rare is it that you are you? Like all the things that had to happen to make you are just, it's astronomical. The kind of genetic lineage that you have, your parents meeting, the kind of zygote that you are, like all these different things that have made you into the person that you are. Like it's astounding when you think of the probabilities that have made you. So yeah, you have to cherish this. You have to really use this time well. If you don't, it's so rare. It'll never happen again. that you are you. That's how rare it is. It'll never happen again unless you like believe in like parallel universes and things like that, which I'm a bit of a like I'm a bit of a fan of kind of like, you know, sort of alternate timelines and all these kinds of things. I'm a bit of a fan of that, but you know, who knows if it's going to probably not happening, but that's how rare it is. That it'll never, that you being the you that you are now will never happen again. Never. That's it. So, yeah, we should really use our time well. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Anybody on the online have any questions?
Anyone from Discord?
Discord, yeah. It's nice to see people on here as well. I can see people's faces and they can ask me in real time. So that's a nice thing as well. Sometimes you get the YouTube comments and it's like, I don't know what you're asking me. So this is quite nice.
Hello, Ajahn.
Hey, Manas.
I'd like to ask a question.
Yeah, for sure.
This would have to do with something that happened among my family. So I thought maybe it'd be a good thing to ask to do with the death and talking about death. Mm. I hope you can hear me well. Is my audio okay?
Yeah. I'm just sort of half deaf, so that's why I...
I see. So I usually, if I bring up death topic and I speak to younger friends, often it turns into something really interesting, and the idea that it's something that should bring up energy and focus is very easy.
Yep.
But I had an opportunity to speak to somebody who's older in my family, and it was not... it was not received very well.
Yeah.
I was told it's like the highest disrespect that I could do to bring up a topic of death and try to speak about it.
Yep.
So I just want to ask, is there anything you'd recommend to speak with perhaps people who are closer to death, especially it seems even more urgent for people who are older, to maybe ease into the idea of death or to make it easier to speak about it?
Yeah. Thank you. That's a good question. It's, the big thing is to do it with kindness and compassion, because it can be so confronting for people, and you have to realize that people are at different levels with this thing, and go really slowly with this, and you know, broach it very, has to be the right time, has to be the right place, and having these, you know, it's an important conversation, but if the person's not willing to engage in it, well, you have to pull back a little bit. But then we can also, you know, find the right times to do it in some ways. But then also, yeah, people are very resistant to it. And if you can sort of have this kind of lead in, you know, very gentle lean in, and this kind of understanding that, okay, this is a hard thing for some people to talk about. And so you understand that and you try to normalize it in this kind of way. And I think if we think about it in this way where it's like, you know, instead of going, well, it's you, you know, you're really like nailing people on it. If you're older and you're going to die, like, no, just speaking about it in general. You know, speaking about it in a very general kind of topic, because most people are cognizant of like, well, this is going to happen. So you speak about it in this very general kind of way, and you sort of soften that hard edge with that, and then you bring it in a little bit more. So again, it's about compassion and understanding, and then you can do some of these kind of more practical things I was talking about, where you sort of have a bit of a conversation, and I realize the conversation is hard, but you know, we just lead into it in a very soft and gentle kind of way.
Thanks, Ajahn. I've got another online question from YouTube here.
Yep.
So in the five daily reflections, in the five daily recollections, old age, sickness, death, separation, and karma, I reflect on separation, that my beloved ones will one day die. Am I reflecting well on separation? Am I reflecting well on separation, or am I doing the recollection on death instead? If that's the case, how to reflect on separation?
Well, they're tied up. No, that's the there's the five recollections, but they're all actually like really tied up together. So if you're recollecting on one, you're in some kind of indirect way, you're recollecting on the others. So, you know, like, you know, old age, old age, as you get older and older and older, there's different aspects of illness that go along with that. You know, a cause of death can be illness. Separation. And so, yeah, you're right. If you're recollecting on the separation that you have to go through with members of your family, this is sort of, it's both. It's a recollection of death, but it's also a recollection of separation. So there's nothing wrong with your recollection there. We can also think about separation in these smaller and very, very, again, very mundane ways of like, well, you know, all the kids that you went to school with, you don't see them anymore. There's these daily separations. The conversations that you have with people are, these things end. So you're always separating, you might have somebody that you like talking to them, but at some point that ends. So there's this, all these kinds of separations that are happening in life, and they're happening like all the time, happening every day. We can think about it on this kind of micro level of separation happens at every moment. I'm gonna get up from this seat soon, and I'm gonna be separated from the camera and all the people here. There's gonna be a separation there. But all the way up to the macro of, yeah, I'll be separated from everything that I love at some point. So I don't think you're doing the reflection in a wrong way. There's many different ways to do this. So, whatever works for you, then, that's a good thing to do. Anybody here? Yeah? Oh.
Yeah, hi.
Where did you come from? Just popped out of nowhere.
I'll stand there. So
it's okay. You can stay there. It's fine.
That's a great talk.
Thanks,
John. I just had when the news channels like Channel 7, Channel 9,
yep.
Whenever they show death, right?
Yeah.
They always say that okay, some of the next images.
It's going to be
disturbing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, can be disturbing to people.
Mm.
And they always say that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so they always try and shield everyone from watching death, like dead body or a car accident or a train accident or whatever. So are we trying to shield people from, the knowledge of death, as you said, which is certain?
Yeah.
Some of the other channels, around the world, Al Jazeera and Al Jazeera, they don't do that.
Yeah.
And some of the others, the ones even from China.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't say that. But these channels, 7, 9, the channels that we normal free-to-air channels seem to do that. So what do you think of that?
So I agree with you. It's like, I spent a lot of time in Thailand, and one thing I was just horrified by when I first went there of like their newspapers, like they're gory. They have like the dead bodies on the front page, and like it's like, whoa, that's full on. Like it's seen as a normal thing. It's seen as a normal thing there because it's not shielded so much. Now, in Western culture, so you're actually speaking to a more of a like a systemic kind of movement as well. We shield death a lot. I don't know if you've noticed, but we don't even really have hearses anymore. You hardly ever see a hearse anymore. When I was growing up, I saw them all the time. You see them every now and again, but not that much. So a lot of times it's in they're vans now. People go in vans. So there's this whole thing where we are like shielding ourselves from this. And look, there's a reason, because some people it's very confronting for them, and it's really, it's over the top for them. So we have to be mindful that there are people like that, and you know, these people, you know, it might be too much for them. But you know, we're also in some kind of way increasing the fear because it's becoming more and more unknown, and we are shielding ourselves from it a bit. But that doesn't mean, you know, we throw it on the front page and we like throw it out there kind of thing. But it's so if there's a nice sort of balance there between them. Yeah, you say, okay, well, this image could be confronting, but you know, then you have to also tell people that it's okay to see them. So I was talking about this to someone the other day, and we're talking about children. You know, how much do you expose your children to these things? And we have the worry that obviously that it's going to like hurt them in some way. And this is obviously a very, very valid one, and we don't want to be going too insane with this. But also part of it is like in some kind of way you have to cause some discomfort to them. Everybody, the first time you find out about it, it's not fun. Like it's not good. But and especially something like some like kids. Actually, kids are a lot more resilient than parents with these things and adults. They're a lot better with it. Like kids and older people, like they're pretty good with it. Everybody else in the middle, mm-hmm. not so good. Kids just like, oh, okay, well, that's it. So and so this is a little bit of a tangent, but it's a personal thing. So one of my earliest memories is I was about 4 years old, and I, you know, grew up in a sort of normal Australian household family kind of thing. And, you know, my mother at the time, she worked at this place that had an Italian restaurant in it. And, you know, in those days, mothers just took their kids to work and you just let them go in the bar kind of thing. Like that was just the way it was. And obviously had a wide group of friends. My parents had a wide group of friends. And one of my, you know, uncles, one of my parents' friends, died in a boating accident. And we found out they came to the restaurant. They found out, and I was there as well. And they're like, Uncle Mario's died in a boat accident. I'm like, what does that mean? And they're like, well, he's died. He's not coming back again. I was like, how does that work? Obviously, being a kid, you don't know. And so how did that? And then, well, and you know, my, you know, again, memories get mixed up. So I'm just sort of, you know, so my mom's like, oh, you know, everybody dies. This, you know, and so is it going to happen to me? I'm like, she's like, yeah. So and I lost it. And I'm like crying hysterically. And like, so this is one of the earliest memories I have is me under a table, like one of those like round tables with one pole in the middle. And I like, I'm holding this thing and I'm crying, no, I'm going to die. No. It was awful. But then, you know, and you know, parents being parents in those days, I'm pretty sure my mom just like grabbed me and yanked me out. I was like, all right, get out. And then as soon as she got me out from under the table, I was okay. It's like, oh, okay. That's it. That's what happens. So it speaks to this kind of thing of, you know, if we expose people to these things, while it might be confronting, it's like we're hiding, like if we're shielding it, it's like we're hiding under the table. But if you pull somebody out, you actually expose it and it becomes okay. It just becomes normal. So yeah, I think there's a value in having a bit of a middle ground with these things. Yeah, you don't want to go too insane of, you know, like gory murders, like crime scenes on 7 News, but you also don't want to shield it so much where it just becomes this kind of like Voldemort kind of never ever speak of this thing, so you become fearful of it. So there's that other side of it of if you never speak about it, it becomes this amorphous thing of like, oh, I'm terrified of it. Yeah. So there has to be a bit of a balance there. So,
thanks, Sanjan. Yeah. Anything from the Discord audience before we move on to the next online question? Okay, so okay. There is one question on YouTube. I'm just tossing up whether to ask this or not, but
it's all on the table today.
Maybe there's a cryptic something that's cryptic in there. But okay. The question's pretty straight. Can doctors prevent death?
Dr. Jaya, handball this one to you. Well, if they could, none of us would die. If doctors could prevent death, then none of us would die. So, I don't think they can prevent it. He can hasten death. He hasten. can hasten death. So, yeah, well, you know, and this for me, this something like this is reassuring. So there's a bit of a movement at the moment of and you know, there's a good motive for it, of people trying to extend people's lives. There's even people working like see death as an engineering problem that we just have to solve. If we can solve this engineering problem, then you know, essentially that we don't have to die. I see the rationale for that, in that, you know, it's good. You know, you're helping people live healthier lives and all these things. But there's this thing is like, well, it's like nobody can really stop this thing. And if we even look at somebody like the Buddha, you know, if the Buddha could stop death, he would have stopped death. But he died when he was 80 years old. So if the Buddha can't stop death, it's like, who am I to think that I can do it? Who am I to think that, you know, doctors could do it? So, yeah, so I'm not really sure. If you find a doctor that can stop death, there might be like a witch doctor somewhere. I don't know. Let's like find that guy.
Thank you, Ajahn. Ajahn, can you please recite the the speech when someone dead from the Buddha's teaching?
Which one?
When someone die, you say something.
Yeah, there's different cultures do different things. So I only really know the Thai one.
From the Buddha.
So there's the. Yeah. So I'm just thinking of the ceremony that we do sometimes. Yeah. We say like anicca vatasankara upadavaya tamino upacittava nirujanti te sangmubasamo sukho sape sata parantija manisura manisure tate marisang marisami yang putang buddhasasane. So that's a long way of saying, like, you know, all things are impermanent. All things are of the nature to arise and decay. So this is something that we usually do at a funeral, or if we're giving a chant or a blessing for the dead, we do these kinds of we do that chant as well. So,
So that's the meaning.
Essentially, it's a lot. That was a very condensed translation. I can't remember the whole translation of the whole thing, but yeah, that's essentially anicca vatasankara upatavaya tamino upacittava nirujanti te sangmubasamo sukho. Anicca vatasankara upatavaya. So all conditioned things are impermanent. Upatavaya tamino. All dharmas are upacittava nirujanti te. And so the stilling of all formation is the highest peace. That's the translation of it. Yeah, had to think about that for a minute.
Thank you very much, Ajahn.
Yeah, there's a question up there.
When you were talking about people, when they anticipate death, you kind of painted it in two ways. So like one person could like anticipate death in a more anxious way.
Yeah, yeah.
And you mentioned that they might have like done people wrong and whatnot. So if someone feels that throughout life they have maybe acted out of people's best interests or whatnot, is their awareness of that enough? Or like what sort of ways do you think people could like deal with that? And does that imply some sort of a karmic consequence as well, I guess, is my question.
No, so that's a really good question, and it speaks to the value of doing this, is that if we have wronged people in some kind of way, I'm not saying that you have, but if we have wronged people in some way and we can still do something about it, you do something about it. You say sorry to the person, you say, if you can make amends for it in some kind of way, you do that while you're alive. if you don't want to, you don't want to hit that end point and go, oh, I should have, like, I should have said sorry to that person. This is the value of doing this beforehand. So can you make karmic amends? Like, yeah, that's the benefit of this. So if we reflect on this and we think, actually, I've done the wrong thing in, you know, there's this aspect of I did the wrong thing in my life here, or I did the wrong thing there. It's like, well, what you have now is this next moment, and you're still alive. So all you have is this next moment to make amends. You know, this is what you have going. This is the opportunity that you have. If you reflect on death, you get this opportunity. You get this opportunity to say sorry. You get this opportunity to make amends in some way. If you just sort of pulled along by the slipstream of life, it's hurtful to think of people that we've hurt in the past. So we just sort of bury it. But, you know, later it starts to come up. And so if we don't make amends for it, then yeah, it's really going to come back worse. So we have, what this does, it gives you the opportunity to go, well, you know, I have the next moment. I'm still alive. I can still say the thing. I can still do what I need to do. And if there is some, you know, you can't make amends for it in some kind of way, it's like, well, then you know, it's like, well, what I have to do is, you know, in some way in my own heart, make amends for this. How am I going to work on that? How am I going to forgive myself? How am I going to forgive this person that maybe I can't say this to them anymore? How can I work on this in my own heart? You know, I still have time to do it. So I think that's the value of this, is like, yeah, you can make amends in this way. That's fine. This one here?
We've got one online.
Yeah, okay.
I'll just go to the online one, John. This question is, how can we cope with irrational night terrors such as fear of death?
Night terrors. I don't really know. I don't really know that one. If it's, you'd have to clarify this for me a little bit more. If it's night terrors of, so night terrors of waking up from a dream, they're very different from just not being able to get to sleep at night because maybe you're worried about death. You'd have to clarify that for me a little bit. So if you can clarify it in some way, and then we'll get back to it. Yeah, we'll go to the next question and just clarify that for me, because they're different. They're two different things. Yeah.
Hi. Wanted to talk about fear of the actual death, annihilation versus the dying process. So often it's the fear of the dying process. To illustrate, I had an experience where I jumped into a swollen river to try and save a man who was trapped in a car.
Right, yeah.
He subsequently drowned. Mm. But the experience was the most beautiful experience, or one of the most beautiful experiences I've had. Wow. It was a great sense of peace. I had an inner voice tell me exactly what to do, when to move away from the car. So then I was contacted by the family, and how did I explain to them this was a beautiful experience? So I think we have so much fear of how we can die. Mm. And in this situation, I could see that he had completely disassociated. He had gone.
Yep.
And so if you were to think, oh, I'm going to die this way, I'd be so fearful of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet the actual experience was beautiful.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think we worry a lot about the dying process, more so than, say, annihilation.
Yeah.
Because we've all been sick, we've had pain, and we think, oh my goodness, when I come to die, it's going to be so much worse.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the sort of the reflection I had.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. And it's understandable because it's an unknown. And so this is... You know, and so that is one of the big fears of people, that it's going to be painful in some way. So some people think that it's going to be painful, and that's why they have a fear. Some people fear the annihilation, so that's why they have a fear. Some people have a fear of, like, well, I don't know if there's annihilation or if there's something else after it. So people have different fears for different things. And so I think this is, and we really went through this in like a lot of detail yesterday, where you do these meditations where you go through the whole process. You do the like the lead up for a couple of weeks to what it's going to be. And you can imagine these things all the way up to the point where you get up to that point where you let everything go. You enter this kind of emptiness and all the time just going, it's okay. You know, it's okay. This is just normal. This is just happening. And this is, you know, sounds sort of analogous to that person that was like, they were, you know, they'd sort of let go. They'd let go. So we have this fear that it's not going to be okay. But that's, as I said, that's the big thing of like just knowing that it's going to be okay, that this is going to happen. Again, it's not kind of normalizing it in this way that, you know, it's okay for people to die. But it's okay that this is a process and this is a part of life. So yeah, it's, again, I think if we can get, the more familiar we get with it, the more we run through these kinds of scenarios, the more we meditate on this, the more we contemplate it, and it just becomes okay, that kind of acceptance. So yeah, it's an interesting thing. And I think we can, you know, tap into that at least a little bit through meditation. So yeah.
The bliss of letting go.
Yeah.
The bliss of letting go.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Absolute bliss.
Yeah, so there's a bliss of letting go. And somebody described it yesterday like a relief. They were like, you know, all I had the whole, somebody said yesterday, like all I had the whole day was a kind of relief. It's like, actually, you're going to be able to put the burden down. So it's not like, again, we think of this, you know, sometimes we think of death as this awful, terrible, fearful, frightful thing, but it's a gift. It's a gift that you will, you know, eventually die, and that you had a life, and that you, if you know that this is going to happen, it's like you can appreciate the gift a lot more. You know, it's not about going, well, it's terrifying. I think if we look at it as a gift, then it changes our whole attitude to this thing. So yeah, doing these kinds of practices, I think, helps us overcome that and just make things okay. So yeah. Did somebody clarify the question?
Yeah, thanks, yeah. Ajahn. She's clarified that. She said that it's from waking up from a dream with the right. Fear of death.
Night terror. So yeah, like actual night terrors, right. Night terror dreams. So I'll just give the caveat that I'm not really qualified not psychologically qualified to give you sort of advice about night terrors. There's plenty of avenues where you can get psychological help with night terrors, and there's different kinds of interventions that you can do. Now, just with that out of the way, there is the meditative things that you can do, and the kind of reflections that you can do. And so one thing that the Buddha did talk about is practicing metta before we go to sleep. And the Buddha says if we practice metta before we go to sleep, then we usually have better dreams. It allows us to sleep well, it allows us to dream well. So that's, you know, one avenue from like a Buddhist perspective that you can do. It's very hard to control your dreams. There are practices that you can do, like dream yoga kind of things, dream yoga practices, this Tibetan practices where you practice sort of lucid dreaming kind of thing that can help you control the dreams in some kind of way. But this is sort of difficult to do. So it's, yeah, I'm sorry. I can't give a good answer on this one. I'm not so familiar with it. So I don't really know, but, yeah, so sorry about that, but that's all I can really give at the moment. Sorry?
Come to
a monastery. Yeah. You might be scared of the kangaroos or something at night.
Ajahn, can you take one more online question?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so it says here, if doctors cannot prevent death, could you please comment on the Lord Christ's return to life after he died? Perhaps a naive question, but honest.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, I don't know if Christ returned after he died. It's...
He didn't die at all. So yeah, if he is the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, then he didn't really die at all. He is God. God still exists. So, look, I don't know about Jesus's resurrection. Can't really comment. I wasn't there. So yeah, it's hard to So don't really know. Not to be flippant about the answer, but I just don't know. So yeah, really appreciate everybody coming today. And so just as a little bit of a thought on this, I'm also thinking about doing a series of meditations on death. So like a 6-week series on death, doing the death contemplation. So if anybody would like to join into that, you're more than welcome. I'm probably going to do it online with the online audience. It's a little bit easier to do that. So it'll be about 6 weeks of doing, we go through these death reflections. We do it once a week. I'll be doing nightly meditations as well. So anybody that's interested in doing those 6-week death reflections, jump in and join the online community. It's very nice to have them here today. We have people from America and all over today. So this is really nice when I can see people. So it's a very nice thing. So with that, we'll call it a day. Did we want to say anything else beforehand or?
Yeah, there's one announcement I forgot at the start. So if anyone wants to, there was some promotion going on the slides up there on the book that's been done here, Beauty of Silence, for our jump on commemorating Ajahn Brahm's 72nd birthday. If you'd like to, I forgot the rest of the promotional stuff. So it's charcoal sketches with some handwritten notes on each of those sketches. So if you'd like to purchase that book, you can pick it up from the office here. Oh, outside. Okay, right. So Adrian's ready for the sales out there. Okay, so that's it. But please join us next door for the lunch dana at the end of this. Thank you. Adrian.
So we'll pay respect to the Buddha Dharma Sangha and then we can go over and do the lunch.
Arahang Samma Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Soakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghang Namami.